Chapter 37. Will be seen in the long run, if not in the short one, to concern Mr. Pinch and others, nearly. Mr. Pecksniff asserts the dignity of outraged virtue. Young Martin Chuzzlewit forms a desperate resolution, Mr. Pinch and Martin, little dreaming of the stormy weather that impended, made themselves very comfortable in the Pecksniffian halls, and improved their friendship daily. Martin's facility, both of invention and execution, being remarkable, the grammar school proceeded with great vigor, and Tom repeatedly declared that if there were anything like certainty in human affairs, or impartiality in human judges, a design so new and full of merit could not fail to carry off the first prize when the time of competition arrived. Without being quite so sanguine himself, Martin had his hopeful anticipations too, and they served to make him brisk and eager at his task. If I should turn out a great architect, Tom, apostrophe said the new pupil one day, as he stood at a little distance from his drawing, and eyed it with much complacency, I'll tell you what should be one of the things I'd build. Apostrophe, I. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Tom. What? Apostrophe, why, your fortune. Apostrophe, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Tom Pinch, quite as much delighted, as if the thing were done. Would you though? How kind of you to say so. Apostrophe, I'd build it up, Tom, apostrophe, returned Martin, on such a strong foundation, that it should last your life, I, and your children's lives too, and their children's after them. I'd be your patron, Tom. I'd take you under my protection. Let me see the man who should give the cold shoulder to anybody I chose to protect and patronize, if I were at the top of the tree, Tom. Apostrophe, apostrophe, now, I don't think, apostrophe, said Mr. Pinch, upon my word, that I was ever more gratified than by this. I really don't. Apostrophe, oh. I mean what I say, apostrophe, retorted Martin, with a manner as free and easy in its condescension to, not to say in its compassion for, the other, as if he were already first architect in ordinary to all the crowned heads in Europe. I'd do it. I'd provide for you. Apostrophe, I am afraid, apostrophe, said Tom, shaking his head, that I should be a mighty awkward person to provide for. Apostrophe, pooh, pooh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined Martin. Never mind that. If I took it in my head to say, Pinch is a clever fellow, I approve of Pinch, I should like to know the man who would venture to put himself in opposition to me. Besides, confound it, Tom, you could be useful to me in 100 ways. Apostrophe, if I were not useful in 1 or 2, it shouldn't be for want of trying, apostrophe, said Tom. For instance, apostrophe, pursued Martin, after a short reflection, you'd be a capital fellow, now, to see that my ideas were properly carried out, and to overlook the works in their progress, before they were sufficiently advanced to be very interesting to me, and to take all that sort of plain sailing. Then you'd be a splendid fellow, to show people over my studio, and to talk about art to 'em, when I couldn't be bored myself, and all that kind of thing. For it would be devilish creditable, Tom, I'm quite in earnest, I give you my word, to have a man of your information about one, instead of some ordinary blockhead. Oh, I'd take care of you. You'd be useful, rely upon it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, to say that Tom had no idea of playing first fiddle in any social orchestra, but was always quite satisfied to be set down for the 150th violin in the band, or thereabouts, is to express his modesty in very inadequate terms. He was much delighted, therefore, by these observations. I should be married to her then, Tom, of course, apostrophe, said Martin. What was that which checked Tom Pinch so suddenly, in the high flow of his gladness, bringing the blood into his honest cheeks, and a remorseful feeling to his honest heart, as if he were unworthy of his friend's regard? I should be married to her then, apostrophe, said Martin, looking with a smile towards the light, and we should have, I hope, children about us. They'd be very fond of you, Tom. apostrophe, but not a word, said Mr. Pinch. The words he would have uttered died upon his lips, and found a life more spiritual in self-denying thoughts. All the children hereabouts are fond of you, Tom, and mine would be, of course, apostrophe, pursued Martin. Perhaps I might name one of them after you. Tom, eh? Well, I don't know. Tom's not a bad name. Thomas Pinch Chuzzlewit. T. P. C. on his pinafores, no objection to that, I should say. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Tom cleared his throat, and smiled. She would like you, Tom, I know, apostrophe, said Martin. I. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Tom Pinch, faintly. I can tell exactly what she would think of you, apostrophe, said Martin, leaning his chin upon his hand, and looking through the window glass, as if he read there what he said. I know her so well. She would smile, Tom, often at first when you spoke to her, or when she looked at you merrily too, but you wouldn't mind that. A brighter smile you never saw. Apostrophe, no, no, apostrophe, said Tom. I wouldn't mind that. Apostrophe, she would be as tender with you, Tom, apostrophe, said Martin, as if you were a child yourself. So you are almost, in some things, and you, Tom? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pinch nodded his entire assent. She would always be kind and good-humored, and glad to see you, apostrophe, said Martin, and when she found out exactly what sort of fellow you were, which she'd do very soon, she would pretend to give you little commissions to execute, and to ask little services of you, which she knew you were burning to render, so that when she really pleased you most, she would try to make you think you most pleased her. She would take to you uncommonly, Tom, and would understand you far more delicately than I ever shall, and would often say, I know, that you were a harmless, gentle, well-intentioned, good fellow. Apostrophe, how silent Tom Pinch was. In honor of old time, apostrophe, said Martin, and of her having heard you play the organ in this damned little church down here for nothing too, we will have one in the house. I shall build an architectural music room on a plan of my own, and it'll look rather knowing in a recess at one end. There you shall play away, Tom, till you tire yourself, and, as you like to do so in the dark, it shall be dark, and many's the summer evening she and I will sit, and listen to you, Tom, be sure of that. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it may have required a stronger effort on Tom Pinch's part to leave the seat on which he sat, and shake his friend by both hands, with nothing but serenity and grateful feeling painted on his face. It may have required a stronger effort to perform this simple act with a pure heart than to achieve many and many a deed to which the doubtful trumpet blown by fame has lustily resounded. Doubtful, because from its long hovering over scenes of violence, the smoke and steam of death have clogged the keys of that brave instrument, and it is not always that its notes are either true or tuneful. It's a proof of the kindness of human nature, apostrophe, said Tom, characteristically putting himself quite out of sight in the matter, that everybody who comes here, as you have done, is more considerate and affectionate to me than I should have any right to hope, if I were the most sanguine creature in the world, or should have any power to express, if I were the most eloquent. It really overpowers me. But trust me, apostrophe, said Tom, that I am not ungrateful, that I never forget, and that, if I can ever prove the truth of my words to you, I will. Apostrophe, that's all right, apostrophe, observed Martin, leaning back in his chair with a hand in each pocket, and yawning drearily. Very fine talking, Tom, but I'm at Pecksniff's, I remember, and perhaps a mile or so out of the high road to fortune just at this minute. So you've heard again this morning from what's his name, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, who may that be? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Tom, seeming to enter a mild protest on behalf of the dignity of an absent person. You know. What is it? North Key. Apostrophe, Westlock, apostrophe, rejoined Tom, in rather a louder tone than usual. Ah. To be sure, apostrophe, said Martin, Westlock. I knew it was something connected with a point of the compass and a door. Well, and what says Westlock? Apostrophe apostrophe O. He has come into his property, apostrophe answered Tom, nodding his head, and smiling. He's a lucky dog, apostrophe said Martin. I wish it were mine instead. Is that all the mystery you were to tell me? Apostrophe apostrophe, no, apostrophe said Tom, not all. Apostrophe, what's the rest? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Martin. For the matter of that, apostrophe said Tom, it's no mystery, and you won't think much of it, but it's very pleasant to me. John always used to say when he was here, mark my words, pinch. When my father's executors cash up he used strange expressions now and then, but that was his way. Apostrophe, cash up's a very good expression, apostrophe observed Martin, when other people don't apply it to you. Well, what a slow fellow you are, Pinch. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, I am I know, apostrophe said Tom, but you'll make me nervous, if you tell me so. I'm afraid you have put me out a little now, for I forget what I was going to say. Apostrophe, when John's father's executors cashed up, apostrophe said Martin impatiently. Oh yes, to be sure, apostrophe cried Tom, yes. Then, says John, I'll give you a dinner, Pinch, and come down to Salisbury on purpose. Now, when John wrote the other day the morning Pecksniff left, you know he said his business was on the point of being immediately settled, and as he was to receive his money directly, when could I meet him at Salisbury? I wrote and said, any day this week, and I told him besides, that there was a new pupil here, and what a fine fellow you were, and what friends we had become. Upon which John writes back this letter Tom produced it fixes tomorrow. Sends his compliments to you, and begs that we three may have the pleasure of dining together, not at the house, where you and I were either, but at the very first hotel in the town. Read what he says. Apostrophe, very well, apostrophe said Martin, glancing over it with his customary coolness. Much obliged to him. I'm agreeable. Apostrophe, Tom could have wished him to be a little more astonished, a little more pleased, or in some form or other a little more interested in such a great event. But he was perfectly self-possessed, and falling into his favorite solace of whistling, took another turn at the grammar school, as if nothing at all had happened. Mr. Pecksniff's horse being regarded in the light of a sacred animal, only to be driven by him, the chief priest of that temple, or by some person distinctly nominated for the time being to that high office by himself, the two young men agreed to walk to Salisbury, and so, when the time came, they set off on foot, which was, after all, a better mode of traveling than in the gig, as the weather was very cold and very dry. Better. A rare, strong, hearty, healthy walk 4 statute miles an hour preferable to that rumbling, tumbling, jolting, shaking, scraping, creaking, villainous old gig? Why, the two things will not admit of comparison. It is an insult to the walk, to set them side by side. Where is an instance of a gig, having ever circulated a man's blood, unless when, putting him in danger of his neck, it awakened in his veins and in his ears, and all along his spine, a tingling heat, much more peculiar than agreeable. When did a gig ever sharpen anybody's wits and energies, unless it was when the horse bolted, and, crashing madly down a steep hill with a stone wall at the bottom, his desperate circumstances suggested to the only gentleman left inside, some novel and unheard of mode of dropping out behind. Better than the gig. The air was cold, Tom, so it was, there was no denying it, but would it have been more genial in the gig? The blacksmith's fire burned very bright, and leaped up high, as though it wanted men to warm, but would it have been less tempting, looked at from the clammy cushions of a gig? The wind blew keenly, nipping the features of the hardy wight who fought his way along, blinding him with his own hair, if he had enough to it, and wintry dust if he hadn't, stopping his breath, as though he had been soused in a cold bath, tearing aside his wrappings up, and whistling in the very marrow of his bones, but it would have done all this 100 times more fiercely to a man in a gig, wouldn't it? A fig for gigs. Better than the gig. When were travelers by wheels and hoofs seen with such red hot cheeks as those? When were they so good humoredly and merrily bloused? When did their laughter ring upon the air, as they turned them round, what time the stronger gusts came sweeping up, and, facing round again as they passed by, dashed on, in such a glow of ruddy health as nothing could keep pace with, but the high spirits it engendered? Better than the gig. Why, here is a man in a gig coming the same way now. Look at him as he passes his whip into his left hand, shapes his numbed right fingers on his granite leg, and beats those marble toes of his upon the footboard. Ha, ha, ha! Who would exchange this rapid hurry of the blood for yonder stagnant misery, though its pace were 20 miles for one? Better than the gig. No man in a gig could have such interest in the milestones. No man in a gig could see, or feel, or think, like merry users of their legs. How, as the wind sweeps on, upon these breezy downs, it tracks its flight in darkening ripples on the grass, and smoothest shadows on the hills. Look round and round upon this bare bleak plain, and see even here, upon a winter's day, how beautiful the shadows are. Alas! It is the nature of their kind to be so. The loveliest things in life, Tom, are but shadows, and they come and go, and change and fade away, as rapidly as these. Another mile, and then begins a fall of snow, making the crow, who skims away so close above the ground to shirk the wind, a blot of ink upon the landscape. But though it drives, and drifts against them as they walk, stiffening on their skirts, and freezing in the lashes of their eyes, they wouldn't have it fall more sparingly, no, not so much, as by a single flake, although they had to go a score of miles. And, lo! The towers of the old cathedral rise before them, even now. And by they come into the sheltered streets, made strangely silent by their white carpet, and so to the inn for which they are bound, where they present such flushed and burning faces to the cold waiter, and are so brimful of vigor, that he almost feels assaulted by their presence. And, having nothing to oppose to the attack, being fresh, or rather stale, from the blazing fire in the coffee room, is quite put out of his pale countenance. A famous inn, the hall a very grove of dead game, and dangling joints of mutton, and in one corner an illustrious larder, with glass doors, developing cold fowls and noble joints, and tarts wherein the raspberry jam coyly withdrew itself, as such a precious Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.